Morning. Today's Daf in Chulin is Daf Yud. We are on Testament Beis. Oh, we're just finishing up one sugya from yesterday, and then we're going to be hitting really big sugya today, and we're going to start the Chazaka Rov Gemaras. Chazaka is coming up in Yud and Beis. The Rov Gemaras is really tomorrow. The sugya that we're finishing up on is a comparison between Sakana and Isser. We know when there's Isserim in the Torah, when there is something which is prohibited in the Torah, so there are times when we need to be machmer, and there are times when we can be mekel. Built into the halacha are certain allowances, certain heterim, but when it comes to sakana, so we're more cautious. So why are we more cautious by sakana than by yisr? And like I said yesterday, so it's because by yisr, so there's a system, and built into the system are certain heterim. But when it comes to sakana, the Torah says that we have to be very careful about our lives and preservation of our own lives. And so therefore, we need to be even more cautious by sakana than that by yisr. Examples that we saw yesterday of this phenomena of being more cautious by sakana, so it really started in a case where you shechted the animal, and then now you have the intestines of the animal just lying around, and a wolf comes, takes the intestines, takes it away, brings it back, and there's a hole now in the intestines. And did the hole come? Was the hole pre-existing? Did it exist before the wolf took it? Did it come after the wolf took it? And we don't know. And what do we say? We said basically, let's walk away with the most reasonable conclusion, which is it's the wolf that put the hole in the intestines, and the hole did not come beforehand, and it's not representative of the animal being a trefa. And that is the most reasonable explanation, which means that the animal's kosher. So to which we said, are we going to say the same thing when it comes to sakana? Meaning if we, let's say, for example, see that a fruit has a hole in it and therefore had exposure, and we are always concerned, when I say we, right, not nowadays, but back in the day, they were always concerned about an animal taking a venomous animal, taking his venom, inserting into the fruit. And so should we be concerned about that? And the answer is yes, meaning pretty much under all circumstances, if you see that there's exposure of a fruit, if a fruit is cut open, or if the wort has been lying around, so under all circumstances, there's going to be a concern. And so when you compare sakana and isser, so we are more cautious by sakana than we are by isser. That's what we said yesterday. The Gemara wanted to know, can we demonstrate that very clearly, that we're going to be more cautious by sakana than we are going to be by isser? And so what we looked over yesterday are a number of examples of where this could be seen. So we went through a couple of examples yesterday. Some of the examples were good, some of them were less than good. But the Gemara is trying to find the perfect example in which we're going to be more cautious by Sakana than we are going to be by Isser. So Amar Avashi Tashma. So this is where we left off yesterday on Testament Beis. Towards the bottom, Tzluchis Shenicha Megula. So over here I have a jug of water, and I left it exposed, I left it open. And as Rashi points out over here, we're talking about water which I'm going to be using for the paraduma. So we know the halach is that for paraduma, the water that I need is mayim chayim. It has to be spring water. And so what we did is we collected the mayim chayim. Rashi also points out over here, where the ashes are not yet mixed in. And you know why? And you know why Rashi says that? Well, we don't have to guess, because Rashi goes on to explain. Rashi, tzluchis, it's right alongside where we are in the Gemara, a little bit, a couple lines lower. So it was filled with mayim chayim for the purposes of mechatas. However, the ashes are not in the water yet. If the ashes would have been mixed in, says Rashi, so you know what? The water would have been a source of tumah, right? It's one of the ironies, the built-in ironies to the paradum, and that it is mitame tahorim. As much as it's metahir tameim, right? It works in opposite effects for different people. For the person who's tameh, it's metahir. For the person who's tar, it's metameh. Okay, good. If the ashes were mixed in, so then it would already be a source of tumah. Not only would it be a source of tumah, it's metameh b'maga uvimasa. Fine. So anyway, so we're just talking about the spring water by itself, and now shinicha magula ava matza mechusa. So what happened was that it was uncovered, and now I come back a little bit later and it was covered. Someone was handling the water. Now, who that someone is, we don't know. But we don't know. That's exactly the point. We don't know who was handling the water. So Tamei, so therefore we're going to take a worst case scenario, and that is we're going to assume that somebody Tamei was handling the water. Shani Amar, Adam Tamei, Nechnas L'Sham B'Kisa. So because I'll say that a person who's Tamei, meaning of course we don't know, but in other words, we're going to suspect that somebody Tamei comes in and covered the lid, and in doing so also touched the water and was Matam of the water. So Hinichim Mechusa V'Amatza Megula. Now let's go in the opposite direction. Let's say it was covered, and now you come along later and it was uncovered. So now, if a cholder were to drink from it, or according to Rabbi Gamliel, if a snake were to drink from it, or if dew fell on it overnight, so then it's going to be disqualified. Now, why is it that when a cholder comes and drinks from it, it's going to be pasul? So Rashi over here gives a couple of explanations. I'm just going to provide right now Rashi's second explanation, but you can see Rashi for a more thorough discussion of this point. Rashi says because the water that's necessary for the paraduma is mayim chayim. And Rashi points out, I'm actually quoting from the second pshat in Rashi, which Rashi himself actually prefers. So what you can't have is you cannot have water that is not that went into another source or into another kli and then was poured back in over here. Meaning the water has to come directly from a spring. So over here, if the water were to go in the mouth of the chulda and then the chulda were to then spit the water back in, which is the nature of the chulda, so under those circumstances, it's no longer mayim chayim. In any event, if the water was first covered and then you come along later and it was uncovered, so the water now is going to be disqualified because of the concern that maybe a chulda came and drank it. So the Gemara says, now you'll notice the discrepancy between what happens if it was uncovered and then you later discovered it was covered, or what happens if it was covered and later discovered it was uncovered. And when it's the latter scenario, so we're worried about a chulda coming along and drinking from it. And the Gemara says, okay, but again, given the evidence that we have, so Rav Yeshua ben Levi says, I'll give you a very simple explanation. It's because when you have shratzim, they have enough of their behavior pattern is normal enough where they're going to be uncovering the lid. But they don't normally cover a lid. That's a human action. That's not an animal action to cover the lid. Now, in all of these scenarios that we just outlined, the ilu suffik mayim, now skip the parentheses, the ilu suffik mayim igula masurim. Now, over here, we're making distinctions and discrepancies between it being open versus closed, closed versus open, and all this is in the area of halacha. If we were to take all these considerations and now translate it over to sakana, we'd be machmer. We'd be machmer every single time. Right? It was I left it open and then later it was closed. I don't know what happened in the interim. What you know, maybe a snake came along and inserted venom into the water. Under all circumstances, we would be machmir. Shmamina chamir sakanta misur shmamina. So in other words, so over here it's a really clear side by side comparison of issues of sakana versus issues of halacha. When it comes to halacha, we're making distinctions. Was it closed versus open? Was it open then closed? And meanwhile, when it comes to sakana, we would never make such distinctions. Okay, adkan. Not adkan, a little bit more. Tanan Hasim, the Gemara over here quotes the Mishnah. Gimel Mashkim Asur Mishim Gilui. There are three different liquids which are subject to concerns of exposure. Meaning if it's left open and unattended, so the venomous animal is going to insert the venom into the liquid. And they are mayim v'yayim v'chalav. So it's water, it's wine, and it's milk. Now, when we say unattended, so how long a period of time are we talking about? So it would be the amount of time where a snake can come from a close location, a proximate location, where the snake was protected, saw the exposed liquid, runs over to the exposed liquid, v'kama makum karav amar yisab brei de Rebbe Yehuda, k'deshi yetim etachas ozen kli v'yishta. The amount of time that it basically can snake its way, I mean that literally over here, snake its way from the ozen hakli, from the handle of the kli, and take a sip. So yishta akachasile, so the Gemara says, wait 1 second. If that's the time consideration, so first of all, it's a very short period of time, but What bothers the Gemara is you're looking right at the snake, meaning we have to be. It has to be enough of a gap of time where a snake could have gotten in, had a swig, inserted its venom, and left, and we never would have known. So the Gemara says, okay, so we'll modify it just a little bit. Okay, good. The amount of time that it takes for the snake to get there, have a sip, insert venom, and go back to its hole. Okay, whatever that time is, so that's the amount of time where if the liquid is left unattended, so then it's not going to, it now that liquid poses a sakana, it's therefore not going to be good. And that kind of takes us to the end of the sugya of sakana. We are now going to come back to our discussion about chazaka, and so let's remind one another. Yesterday's daf, and really going all the way back to daf ches, so we learned about Rav Huna's tried and true principle, and that is the dual chazaka that exists by an animal. When the animal is alive, so the animal exists in a cheskas iser. The status of the animal is that it's aser. Rashi over there on the Gemara writes that the cheskas iser is aver min achai. Right, the easier way to say that it's a cheskas of eina shchuta, but in any event, in other words, we know that it's aser while it's alive, and until I know that the shchita was done correctly, says Rav Huna, so we are going to be assuming that the animal remains in that state of iser unless I know that the shchita was a shchita kshera kedas ukedin, perfectly done shchita. There's another chazaka that was taught to us by Rav Huna. On Testament Aleph, and that is the chazaka that the animal is an eino treifa. Animal's not a treifa, meaning we don't have to go through the process of taking every organ and checking every organ to see whether it's severed or punctured. When we get to the third parak of the Masechta, we're going to go in great detail through the anatomy of the animal and take a tour of all the organs and what exactly would render each one of the organs a treifa, meaning which one would render the animal a treifa. That's good, but that's all if. But we don't have to assume that. We can assume that an animal is becheskas in a trefa, unless there is something suspicious about the animal that leads us to believe otherwise. Otherwise, you don't have to worry that the animal is a trefa. As I mentioned yesterday, minhag Yisrael is to check the lungs of the animal, but that's an old minhag. But the chazaka is that the animal is an eino trefa. Good. So those are the two chazakas that were taught to us by Rav Huna back on yesterday's daf. Our Gemara now is going to be continuing along that line, with the following discussion. Now, before we start with the Gemara, so let's make sure that we're all clear. In order for the shechita to be a good shechita, so I need a knife that has a smooth edge with no nicks in it whatsoever. A serration in the knife is going to be problematic because what you may end up doing, and I'll say it even clearer and better, what you will end up doing with a serration in the knife is that instead of cutting the trachea and the esophagus, what you're going to be doing is tearing at the trachea and the esophagus, and that's not shchita. Shchita is cutting. It has to be a slicing action, and so therefore, with a nick in the knife, so it's going to be a tearing action, not a cutting action, and therefore the shchita is not going to be good. The discussion that the Gemara is going to have is as follows. Prior to shchita, you check the knife. Knife checks out good. Okay, the bedika sasak in the checking of the knife. You take your fingernail, you run it over the knife. We're going to learn this a little bit later on in our perek. And if your fingernail catches, that's a nick, that's no good. If your fingernail glides over the blade of the knife, so the knife is good. You checked it before you did the shechita, wonderful. Then you shechted the animal, you look at the knife once again, and there's now a nick in the knife. Okay, what do we assume? When did that nick take place? Before the shechita or after the shechita? Good. That's going to be our discussion in the Gemara. You shech with a knife, and the knife turns out to be a nick knife after the shechita. And Rashi over here says, like the way I described it, but I did that because of Rashi, and that you check the knife prior to the shechita. So you know going in, the knife was good. Now after the shechita, you're looking at the knife, you see a nick in the knife, we have a problem. So Hashochet B'Sagav Nim says, Beguma Amar Rav Huna, Afilu Shibar Ba'atzam, is called Ayam Psula, Chayshinem B'Shema B'Or Nifkama. Rav Huna takes the worst case scenario. What is the worst case scenario? When did that nick occur? So look, I looked at the knife right beforehand. So when's the first possible chance that the knife could get nicked? As you're now slicing through the front of the neck of the animal. Now the front of the neck of the animal, what are we talking about? Hair, skin, cartilage, muscle, meaning it's all soft material. So arteries, veins, but they're all soft material. It's not until you get to the end of the neck, as you're going in from the front of the neck, it's not until you get to the vertebrae where you're going to be introduced to something that's hard. But Rav Huna says, but I'm still going to take a worst case scenario, which is that the knife got nicked at the front of the neck of the animal. Even though it's just the hide of the animal. But still, it's possible that the hide of the front of the neck of the animal is the culprit and what caused the nick in the knife. And so therefore, the shechita is not going to be a good shechita. That is the position of Rav Huna. Rav Chista Amar Ksherish Amar Be'atzim Nifkama. Now Rav Chista says, no, I'll take the best case scenario. And that is that the knife got nicked, but only after the shechita. Meaning as you went, continue through the neck of the animal. So as you were cutting through all the soft stuff, the hide and the muscle and the cartilage. Okay, good. That's, you know, it's not going to make a nick in the knife. Aye, but you discovered a nick afterwards. That's because when you got to the end of the shechita, what you did is you hit the vertebrae. That's what caused the nick in the knife. So over here, a very basic machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Chista in terms of what kind of concern are we going to be having in terms of when the knife gets nicked. Rav Huna takes the worst case scenario, and Rav Chista takes a best case scenario. Now, Bishlam Rav Huna Kishmaita. Now, as far as understanding Rav Huna is concerned, the Gemara says it's actually easy. It's easy to understand Rav Huna based on what he taught us yesterday. He taught us that an animal remains in a cheskas iser unless I know definitively otherwise. So over here, I ended the shechita. I'm looking at the knife. I see a nick in the knife. So what do I work with? I work with what's called status quo. The status quo of the animal is that the animal is usser and remains in a state of iser unless I know otherwise. So that's why, according to Rav Huna, you operate with a worst case scenario. But Ella, Rav Chista, my time. But what is the reason behind Rav Chista? Why is Rav Chista makel? So Amalecha, it's Vada Pogam or Suffolk Pogam, Suffolk Lo Pogam. Havi Suffolk Vadavin, Suffolk Motsimi De Vadai. So the Gemara says, in terms of defending Rav Chista, and that's also pretty easy. Because let's take a look at our culprits. We have a nicked knife after the shechita. What are the culprits in terms of who make that nick in the knife? It's either going to be the soft hide at the front of the neck of the animal, or it's going to be the bone in the back of the neck of the animal. So you tell me, which one is more likely to create a nick in the knife? The soft hide? It's a suffix. Maybe. All right? I'll say unlikely, but I'll even use the wording of the Gemara. Suffix. Maybe. The bone in the back? Probably. Well, the Gemara's language is vadai. So given those two, those are my two choices in terms of what created the nick in the knife, it's going to be the bone and it's not going to be the hide. So Rav Chista says, over here, ein safek motzi midei vadai. Now this is not the normal usage of the expression ein safek motzi midei vadai, but over here certainly the point is being made. If I'm looking at two culprits of which created the nick in the knife, it's going to be the bone over that of the hide. It seems to be much clearer. That seems to be a more reasonable and sound conclusion. Mesiv Rava L'siyua L'Rav Huna. And so now, from this point going forward, we're going to see which position seems to be more supportable. Rav Huna or Rav Chista. Once again, Rav Huna is a machmir. He says that I'm going to take the worst case scenario possibility. The nick was created by the front of the neck of the animal, thereby rendering the shechita a shechita psula. Rav Chista takes the most lenient position, which is that the nick was created by the back of the neck of the animal, the vertebrae of the animal, and so therefore the shechita is gone. The Gemara now, from this point going forward, for a good part of the remainder of today's daf, is going to see which position is a more defensible position.
The majority of the shechitas that are kosher, the knife goes through the neck of the skin, and there's never any damage to it. So you could argue that the majority of the cases, this like, it's not likely to happen.
But you saw the nick.
No, I understand that, but the thing is that you could say that the majority of cases where it goes to the skin, it's not happening. So how could you argue that this is happening now?
It's what's called an...
It goes to the bone, it's more likely to happen.
I hear you. It's what's called an halacha reyusa. Meaning now that we have positive evidence that something went wrong, so now we have to question when that occurred. You're right. Meaning under normal
circumstances... But you have probability and likelihood based on your experience having done 1,000 times of kosher shechitas, it goes through your skin and never gets nicked. So.
Right. I hear you. But that's what's called a reyusa. And that's what the Gemara is dealing with. So Tavavei Olav Nimsa Olav Davar Chotzeit. So here we're going to take a look at the following scenario. And the Gemara says that this is going to be supportive of Rav Huna. Okay, a person's tummy and he has to go to the mikvah. Good. So he goes to the mikvah and he comes out of the mikvah. Now, did he clean himself well before he went to the mikvah? Let's assume for our purposes, yeah, he did. He cleaned himself well. But nevertheless, so they went to the mikvah, came out of the mikvah. Later that day, looks at his arm and he sees clearly a patch of dirt on his arm. When did that dirt get on his arm? Was it there before he tovel in the mikvah or after he tovel in the mikvah? Alpha pishit is asli b'osom in kolayam kulo lo asalot tefila ashi yomer barli shelo ayeli alai kon lachain. And so we are going to say, says the Brisa, that we have to be concerned that that dirt was on his arm prior to he tovel in the mikvah, unless he can tell you with absolute certainty that that dirt was not on his arm prior to him going to the mikvah. And even if the Brisa over here is very clear, even if, let's say, he was, you know, playing in the dirt, okay, I know it sounds strange, but he was working with dirt the whole day after he tovel in the mikvah, and so therefore we can make a very sound argument that the dirt came on his arm after he tovel in the mikvah, unless he can tell you with absolute certainty that that dirt was not on his arm prior to him going to the mikvah, so the tefillah is not going to be a good tefillah. Now, if anything, there seems to be incredibly strong support for Rav Huna. This is exactly what Rav Huna is saying, is that, look, after the fact we know something went wrong. When did it go wrong? At what point in the process? Rav Huna says we're going to back it up all the way to the beginning of the process. So we said that over here when it comes to mikvah, we're going to say the same thing by Shechita. The two cases seem to be incredibly similar. And in the case of the mikvah, the ruling is really clear, which is that the tefillah is not going to be a good tefillah unless you can absolutely say it was not there on your arm prior to you toveling in the mikvah. V'ha-ha-cha, let me just spell this out. V'ha-ha-cha devadei tavol. Now over here, did he tovel in the mikvah? Yes. And safik have Allah, safik lo have Allah. Did he have the dirt on him? He's not sure. V'ka-ha-cha safik amosim devadei. And meanwhile, the uncertainty is still going to be removing the clear position that he toveled in the mikvah. And so shouldn't we be saying the same thing over here by the Shechita? And now the Gemara is going to go back and forth with the comparison. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the guy toveling in the mikvah, remember, why is he toveling in the mikvah? Because he for sure is Tameh. So he starts off, he, the person toveling, starts off with a Cheskas Tumah. The Gemara says, yeah, you know what, I got news for you. Okay, but now again, we're comparing the mikvah case to our case of the Shechita. So I got news for you. When it comes to an animal, prior to the Shechita, the animal also is in the state of Cheskas Iser. The animal is Iser until we know that the Shechita was absolutely correct. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the animal over here is Shechted. Hachanami Hare Tav Lefanecha. The person toveling the mikvah went to the mikvah. So, ha isyal de be'reyusa. Yeah, but in the case of the mikvah, so there's a reyusa. He's got dirt on his arm. So, achinam isyal de be'reyusa. So, over here with the knife, there also is a reyusa. There's a nick in the knife. So, right now, we're going back and forth. And right now, the Gemara is saying, I don't see a difference between the cases. So, if we're going to be machmer in the case of the mikvah, which we are, meaning the Braisa says we're going to be machmer, so presumably we have to be machmer over here, and this is totally supportive of Rav Huna. And the Gemara says, yeah, but upon further review of the comparison, we can make a distinction. And the Gemara says, Sakin Yisrai Behem Alo Yisrai. I still think there's a distinction, and that is the following. When we're talking about the person who toveled in the mikvah, so he went into the mikvah, he came out of the mikvah, there was a patch of dirt on him, and what? And now there's a reyusa because there's a patch of dirt. Where is the reyusa? It's on him, the person who needs the tahara. So right now, where there's a reyusa, and the reyusa is on him, so therefore we're going to be machmer, and we're going to take a worst-case scenario. I shechted the animal, and this is probably a lot of what you were arguing earlier. I shechted the animal, and now look at the animal. Animal shechted correctly, meaning the knife went back and forth through the neck of the animal, and the shechita right now looks really good. The problem is something external, the knife. Now, I understand the knife was necessary for the Shechita. You can't do the Shechita without the knife. But still, as far as the reyusa is concerned, the reyusa does not exist in the animal itself. The reyusa exists in something which is external, i.e. the knife. And because the reyusa is something which is external, so therefore, the Shechita over here, we don't have to necessarily equate the two cases, and it could very well be that we could defend Rav Chista's position. Okay, now, even though I tried my best to explain the Gemara's distinction, Even as I say it, even as you hear it, I'm not sure if it really, if it really sinks well, because in other words, the reyusa is in the knife and the knife is external. Okay, but without the knife, there would be no shechita. You can't shecht without a knife. So because the knife is an external entity, so therefore the shechita should be a good shechita. And meanwhile, in the case of the mikvah, the dirt's on the person's body, and that makes it worse. Okay, so Tosfos over here says over the Gemara a little bit differently. The way I just explained it is Rashi. I paraphrased, obviously, but I just explained it like Rashi. Tosfos over here explains it a little bit differently in terms of what the Gemara's conclusion was. If you want to follow me in Tosfos, it's the last Tosfos on the Amud, and it's the last four lines of the Tosfos, five lines of Tosfos. El akarcha chachikamer stakin is right perush v'ika sveika tuva. Shema be'etzem nifkama ve'afila be'or nifkama shema lo nishchata simanim keneged ha'pikima ve'havikis fake sveika. So Tosfos over here says, here's what really the Gemara meant in terms of making a distinction between the cases. In the case of the tefillah, so you come out of the mikvah, and then at a later point in the day you notice that there's dirt on your arm. You don't know when that dirt came on. But here's what you do know for sure. If that dirt was on you during the tefillah would be no good. And that's it. Meaning what we have in front of us right now is a suffix, is a legitimate question in terms of when that dirt presented itself on your arm. And we don't know. But when there's a nick on the knife after the shechita, it doesn't boil down to one question. Was the nick there, yes or no? Because really, the way Tosfos describes it, so ika sveka tuva. There's a lot of questions you can ask right now. Meaning question number one, was the nick there on the knife before or after the shechita? We don't know. Number two, even if the nick was on the knife, does that necessarily render the animal a trefo or nevela? Unclear. Because consider that, what is the shechita requirement? That you take the knife and you go back and forth over the neck of the animal. Now it could very well be that the nick is right in the dead center of the knife, and maybe then that makes more of a problem. But if we can imagine now the nick being somewhere on the extremity of the knife, let's say it's towards the top or toward the bottom, or even somewhere closer to the middle, but it's not in dead center. So now I'm cutting with the knife. It doesn't necessarily have to be that the nick went over the neck of the animal, or specifically the pipes of the animal, the trachea and the esophagus. So over here now, there are multiple questions that we could be asking after we shecht with a now discovered nicked knife. So therefore the cases are, there are more questions you can ask the way Tosfos describes it. It's a sveika regarding the knife. That's the Gemara's answer, says Tosfos. That's how I understand the answer.
In general, the guy who goes into the mikvah with dirt, why can't you argue that if he really had dirt on his before, he would have been washed off in the mikvah?
Okay. I mean...
And the fact that he has gotten
out... Dirt might not be the best example being used because the Gemara just describes it as a chatzitza. It's got to be something that really... That really sticks on the body. So, but okay, I do hear you. The Gemara now may say the Gemara now is going to challenge once again. We're in the bottom of Yud Amud Aleph, and the Gemara challenges v'shachar z'veshav v'achakach nishmata agrageris. Again, let me just give a really brief introduction over here to this brisa that we're about to learn together, and that's as follows: a couple of basic pieces of information. One, when I'm shechting a bird as opposed to an animal, you only need to cut one of the simanim. And it doesn't matter which one. It could be the esophagus or it could be the trachea. By a bird, you just have to cut one of the simanim. Number two is that if the pipes, either one of them, get dislocated from its place, so then it's what's called ikor as simanim, where the pipes now are dislocated, and that's a psul ha-shechita. That would disqualify the shechita. Now, when it comes to a bird, so because I only need to cut one pipe, so now we can have the following scenario occur. Let's say the pipe that I'm cutting is the esophagus. That's the case over here that's being dealt with in the brisa. That's why I'm using this as my example. Let's say it doesn't really matter, by the way, which pipe we're working with, but I'm just going to operate with the Gemara's example. And by the way, that point Rashi makes at the bottom of the Amud, that doesn't really matter. It just happens to be that anatomically, it's the windpipe that ends up getting dislocated more easily. So, but in any event, you cut the esophagus, and the windpipe gets dislocated. So what the brace is going to basically tell us is as follows. If the dislocation of the trachea occurs after me cutting the veshet, after me cutting the esophagus, we're fine, because the shechita has already been performed. And so therefore, a dislocation of the trachea afterwards is not a big deal. It's not a big deal at all. However, if the trachea gets dislocated before I cut the esophagus, so that's not good. Now, in other words, the shechita is a shechita psula. Even though we all understand, I'm not cutting the trachea, I'm cutting the esophagus, it doesn't matter. If either of the pipes are dislocated prior to the shechita is a shechita psula. Those are the facts on the ground. So now the Bryce over here is going to basically teach us those two points that we just learned together outside. And then the question which the Bryce is going to deal with is, let's say after I shechted the bird, but I only cut the esophagus, I now notice that the trachea was dislocated, and I don't know when it happened. So here we go once again with our question of, what do we assume? Do we assume the worst or do we assume the best? So let's all see all this inside. Shachas avesh v'achakach nishmata gargaris ksheira. Nishmata gargaris v'achakach shachas avesh psula. So points one and two of the brises is what we just laid out. That if the trachea were dislocated after the shechita, it's fine. If the trachea was dislocated before the shechita, not fine. Puzzle. No good. Shachas avesh v'nimsa gargaris shmuta v'ene odeim kodem shechita nishmatayim lachar shechita nishmata. But let's say I cut the veshet of the bird, and then I discover only afterwards a dislocated trachea. So Zayah Maisav Amar Kol Safik B'Shechita Pasul. This incident actually occurred. They went over to the Chachamim, and the Chachamim said that this is going to be a disqualified Shechita. And the Braisa ends off with the following four words: Kol Safik B'Shechita Pasul. Anytime you have a Safik in the Shechita, it's going to be disqualified. Atkan divrei habraisa. Now, over there in those last four words of the braisa, so what does it sound like? It sounds very much like Rav Huna. If I have anything questionable that arises during the shechita, even though the discovery of that happened after the shechita, it's not going to be good. And that's exactly like Rav Huna saying. That's the support of Rav Huna. Kol safek b'shechita l'sui mai, lav l'sui ki agavna. So isn't it coming to include our case of the nicked knife? The Gemara says not necessarily. Lo l'sui safek shal safek darath. So the Gemara says, no, it could be talking about where there's a suffix in the Shechita itself, i.e., you pause in the middle of the Shechita. Or you're not sure if you pause in the middle of the Shechita. Or Hadrasa. Instead of slicing back and forth, you're going in and you're pushing in, and I'm not sure, maybe I did, maybe I didn't push in. So if you have a suffix like that, that's going to be a problem. But if we're talking about a suffix that occurs afterwards, i.e. the knife got nicked and you only discovered afterwards, maybe not. Maybe that's not what the Brisa is talking about. And once again, the Brisa, the Gemara defends Rav Chista, even though the Brisa certainly seems to be taking the Rav Huna position. Maishna, the Gemara says, wait one second. So you're saying now that by suffix shihi or suffix adrasa, we're going to be machmer. But when the knife gets nicked, we're going to be makel? Well, what's the difference? So and again, the Gemara draws the same distinction. Well, because if it's shihi or hadrasa, so the suffix is in the animal. Now again, by the way, it's really hard to hear this. The suffix in the animal. The suffix is in the act of shechita. It's not in the animal. So, but still, the Gemara says that when it comes to shihi hadrasa, the suffix in the animal. But when it comes to the nick on the knife, it's something which is external. And again, we can go back to Tosfos once again, and we'll read the Gemara like Tosfos, which is that what the real distinction of the Gemara is that when it comes to shihi and drasa, that's one suffix. But when it comes to a nick on the knife, once again, there are multiple questions you can ask. One, did the nick occur before or after the shechita? Two, did I even come into contact with the nicked portion of the knife along the trachea and the esophagus? Maybe I didn't even do that. Maybe the clean part of the knife came into contact, and we simply don't know. There are multiple questions you can ask. Tosha says that's how you read the Gemara. V'hilchasa. Okay, so for an Amud of Gemara, now we've been going back and forth with Rav Huna, Rav Chista, and so the Gemara arrives at a conclusion. V'hilchasa kavasa de Rav Huna b'shalosh shibar ba'etzem. V'hilchasa kavasa de Rav Chista k'shishibar ba'etzem. So the halacha falls like Rav Huna when you did nothing else with the knife. If I did not cut bones with the knife afterwards. And so now I'm left to ponder. When did the nick occur? So unless you cut bones afterwards, so we are going to be machmer like Rav Huna. We're going to say that the soft hide on the front of the neck of the animal is what caused the nick. Again, we don't know for sure, but we are going to be assuming worst case scenario like Rav Huna. And as far as, let's say, with the knife afterwards, you go ahead and you start chopping on bone with the knife afterwards, so then you can be makel like Rav Chista. But otherwise, you have to be machmer like Rav Huna. Rashi writes over here, a good observation regarding Rashi. You know, Rashi throughout Shas is a perish. He explains the Gemara, right? But in other words, in terms of learning the Gemara, Rashi seldomly gives psak halacha. because that's not his goal, his objective. However, when it comes to chulin, so a number of times throughout chulin, he tells you this is a halacha, this is a halacha. Meaning chulin is a lot of halacha l'maisa, and Rashi very often tells you this is a halacha. So here's a good example: top Rashi in the Amud, Hilchus HaKaravuna deChayshin laOr va'al yadi hayamaisa. So in other words, we're worried about the hide on the front of the neck. In other words, we pass like Ravuna. And Rashi says, and this happened to me, or in other words, in my community, where after the Shechita, so they found a nick on the knife. And Vahorali Rabbeinu Yaakov Barav Yakar, Be'of Le'isser. And my Rebbe Paskin that we should be Machmer like Ravuna, and even if it's a bird. What does that mean, even if it's a bird? So it means that a bird's neck is even softer than that of an animal. An animal, you have a hide. So I described it this morning as something being soft. Relative to bone, it's soft. But then you have the neck of a bird, it's even softer. In other words, you don't have that leathery skin that you have on the animal. It's not, by the way, I call it leathery. It is. So anyway, but even by a bird, so Rashi says, my Rebbe Paskin for me, that we should be machmer. And if there's a nick discovered on the knife, so we're going to be machmer like Rav Huna. Okay. So the Gemara's conclusion is that unless you chop up bones afterwards with this knife, which, by the way, I don't want to say ridiculous, but ridiculous in the sense that it's your shochet's knife. He's not afterwards going to start whacking away at bones afterwards. Wait one second. So but still, the point of the Gemara's conclusion is that unless you can say for sure that the nick occurred afterwards, so the shechita is not going to be a good shechita.
Regarding this ruling, if you're requiring to check the knife afterward,
we'll get to that.
You're suspecting that the shechita itself can cause that. So how could it be?
Well, we'll get to that. So have uvda v'tarav of Yosef atleis archius. So now the Gemara itself reports an incident where a shochet was just shechting 13 animals, and after the 13th animal, so then he looked at his knife, and the knife had a nick on it, and they trafed up all 13 of those animals. Once again, we don't know where the nick occurred. Once again, we paskin like Rav Huna, presumably, meaning the Gemara just said that, and so now all 13 animals are going to be pasul. I say the word pasul, by the way, everyone understands. In other words, trafe. So, keman ka Rav Huna, v'afilo kamaisa. So are we saying every one of the animals, even the first animal? The Gemara says not necessarily. Now, it's interesting the Gemara says not necessarily because the Gemara just paskin like Rav Huna. But when the Gemara is saying not necessarily, meaning we don't know if Rav Yosef necessarily paskins like Rav Huna. So not necessarily. Lo k'Rav Chista labar mikamaisa. So it could very well be that he paskins like Rav Chista, and it would be that not all 13 animals are going to be rendered disqualified, only the last 12. The first one, no. Because remember, according to Rav Chista, there's no way the front of the neck of that first animal is going to be the culprit of what caused the nick in the knife. So the Gemara says, or no. Really, the truth of the matter is that we postled every animal, including the first one, and we are going like Rav Huna. Why? Because the Ikar Rav Chista Michti, Mitla Talinan. Because remember, according to Rav Chista, what do we have? We have this idea of Tliya, meaning that we can hang our hat on the bone. So look, if Rav Chista is looking at a best case scenario, what is a best case scenario? You just went through 13 animals. You just checked the 13 animals. And only after the 13th animal, you discover a nick on the knife and you didn't check in the interim. So now, what is the best case scenario? Best case scenario is that nick occurred on the vertebrae of the 13th animal. So if we are assuming a best case scenario for Rav Chista, we would not have trafed up any of the animals. So Amalei Ravach, Rebrei Derevel, Ravashi, Rav Kahana Masrech B'dikusa, Ben Kol Chad V'chada. So the Gemara now says that Rav Kahana required an examination on the knife between every one of the animals that was shechted. So now, why would he require that? Is he going like Rav Huna or is he going like Rav Chista? And the Gemara asks exactly that question. Come on, Rav Huna lemisal kamaisa. Is the examination there to render disqualified everything done beforehand? So in other words, is he going like Rav Huna? So lo, Rav Chista lachshur basraisa. No, not necessarily. The examination that's done in between animals is because it is a It is a nod to Rav Chista's position, which is that the animals done prior are fine. Because again, Rav Chista assumes that the nick occurred, not the front of the neck of the animal, but if anything, on the back of the neck. And it's only to go from this point going forward. So, and before we get to the next point of the Gemara, and obviously, as Rashi points out over here, you can't argue what the Gemara just argued a moment ago, which is that according to Rav Chista, what's the best case scenario? That the nick occurred only at the tail end, pun intended, only at the tail end of all 13 animals. But but obviously over here with Rav Kahana suggesting that a bedikah is done between every animal to be machshir from that point which is going forward. Obviously, he is not subscribing to the Gemara that we learned just a moment ago, that we are going to assume a best case scenario that the nick occurred only at the end of all those animals. The Gemara says, okay. So if you're in fact, if Rav Kahana is demanding a bedikah to be done between every one of the animals, so shouldn't we also demand a bedikas chacham? To which the Gemara says, no, of course not. So edecha neman b'isurin, because I only need one person to check, and that one person is going to be given an extended credibility. We have a principle that comes up time and again throughout Shas called edecha neman b'isurin. It is most popularly learned in the beginning of Gittin, because the Tosfos over there, the Rashi and Tosfos over there in the beginning of Gittin on Beis Amud Beis, goes through a discussion in terms of how we know this principle of Eidecha Neman B'Yisurin. For our purposes right now, let's say it nice and simple, we know this principle, and so therefore I don't have to bring it to the Chacham to check it every single time. Iachi Mikari Nami Lo. Gemara says, okay, you tell me I don't have to bring it to a Chacham, but meanwhile, isn't it the fact that I have to bring it to a Chacham? To which the Gemara says, yes. The Gemara says, yes, that part's true. You do have to bring it to the Chacham, but that's a halacha that's built in, not to the Shechita, but built into Kavod HaRav. In other words, you have a Rav in your community, and there's a mitzvah of Kavod HaRav, of being mechabed your Rebbe in your community. So as a Shochet, you're bringing it to the Rav, not because his Bedika is better than your Bedika, yours is just as good as his, but because of Kavod HaRav. Good. So in the beginning of the day, you bring it over to the Rav of the community, you show it to him, he'll do the examination, good, Kavod HaRav. And then between every Shechita, Rav Kahana requires a Bedika, not that you have to bring it back to the Rav, in other words, you already got a check in the box for Kavod HaRav. Now that you want to make sure that that the knife was nick-free between every one of the Shechita, so therefore, a Bedika is done in between each one. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya of Rav Huna and Rav Chista. The Gemara is, in fact, conclusion is that we're machmir like Rav Huna. Rashi says it as well, that we're machmir like Rav Huna. Rashi goes even so far, even by birds, we're machmir like Rav Huna. So with a discovery of a nick on the knife after the Shechita, so we assume the worst case scenario, and the reason why we assume that is because of Rav Huna's chazaka that we learned in yesterday's daf. An animal is becheskas iser omedes, that it remains in a status of being usher unless I know positively that the Shechita was a good Shechita. Okay. We're going to do a little bit more Gemara this morning. And over here now, between today and tomorrow's Gemara, we're going to be attacking some of the most basic principles throughout Shas. Today, for the remainder of today's daf, we're going to be learning about the principle of Chazaka, status quo. Tomorrow's daf, we're going to be learning about the principles of Rov, of the majority. And it's great why these Gemaras are tucked away in the middle of Chulin. So we generally understand, because the principles of Chazaka and Rov really play a big part in the halachas of Shechita and Taharovis, Issa Veheter, meaning so, okay. And so the Gemara now puts these sugyas over here in Chulin. And so for today, we talk about Chazaka. What is the idea of Chazaka? Status quo. Okay, it's similar to the concept of inertia, and which is that basically, if something has a given status, so that given status will perpetuate until I learn otherwise. Even though there is a time period in between, if let's say we can create two time periods, a T1, T2. If there is at T1, the status is one way. At T2, the status changes. When between the two would that change occur? Chazaka tells us that we are going to be operating with an assumption, a presumption that it was the status of T1 until we know otherwise. This is the principle of Chazaka. Where does the Torah teach us about Chazaka? How do we know that? And so the answer is, it's not clearly articulated in the Torah. The Torah does not speak to principles. The Torah teaches us halachas and mitzvos. And basically what we're going to do for the remainder of today's daf is that we're going to look at one particular halacha in the Torah and deduce a principle based on that halacha, and specifically the principle of chazakah. And as Rashi points out over here, right, I double underlined the Rashi, it means I got really excited. As Rashi points out over here, we're going to go wherever chazakah takes us, whether it's le'isser or whether it's leheter. Meaning it doesn't matter whether the conclusion is that we're going to be machmer, it doesn't matter if the conclusion is going to be mekel, meaning chazakah is a principle, and it doesn't matter directionally whether it's le'isser or leheter. Good. So how do I know? So Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmina, Amar Rav Yonasan, Amar Kra. V'yatsa koin min habayis ha-pesach ha-habayis v'yizkir es habayis shivas yamim. Something's on the wall of the house that looks like saras, right? Kanega, right near Ali. It looks like saras, but I'm not a kohen. I'm not going to make these decisions. So I'm going to call in the kohen. So I called the kohen into my house, Rufino Sabais, and what we're going to do is we're going to take everything out of the house, and then the kohen's going to come and he's going to do an examination. And then what the kohen's going to do after he examines is that the kohen's going to walk out of the house, he's going to close the door, and he's going to leave the house in its state for the next 7 days. Now, the Gemara says, good. That's the halacha. What's the deduction? So Dilma, Denafik Vasar, Batzalei Shiura. Now, by the time the Kohen's walking out of the house, could it not be that the size of the nega that he sees on the wall of the house has either expanded or contracted? Though the Gemara right now is entertaining the idea of perhaps contraction. So how do I know that the size of the nega has maintained its status, its size, while the Kohen is leaving? So it must be based on the principle of chazaka. So maskav la revach rabbi Yaakov v'dilma kagon shiasa derech achorav dekachazi lei kinafak. So the Gemara says, I don't know if you could deduce chazaka from that case. Why can't we make the argument that the Kohen, when he's walking out of the house, is walking backwards, so he sees the tzaras from every last step that he takes outside as he's leaving the house? So Abayi says, I reject that argument based on two reasons. One, that's not how you exit. You don't walk away backwards. We'll challenge that in just a moment. And let's say the nega is on the back of the door. Even as our Kohen is walking out of the house, and even if he's walking backwards like you're suggesting, but if the nega is on the back of the door, so he will not be seeing it as he's exiting the house. It's just the nature of Saras being on the back of the door. So v'chitem depasak le'kafsa. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what the Kohen's going to do is he's going to make a window in the house, meaning basically smash a hole in the house so that he's able to see it as he's walking out. V'atanan, the Gemara says, yeah, but I don't think that's correct. So bais afalim po chasam po chalonos l'ros es nigo. A house that has no windows in it. So what you do not do, says the Mishnah in Negayim, is you don't make windows in the house so that you can have a better view of the nega. Whatever light is coming into the house to see the nega, that is the only light the Kohen can use in terms of seeing the nega. And if he cannot see it given the light that's given to him, so he does not have a requirement to make more light. So Amalei Rav Dekarmat Yitziach Derech Achorav Loshma Yitziach Kohen Gadol B'Yom Kippurim Yochiach Dechsev Be'Yitziach V'Tanan Yatzor Valo Derech Knesset Son. So as far as your first challenge, that walking out backwards is not considered walking out, that's not true. The Kohen Gadol, when he's leaving, the Kodesh HaKadosh in Yom Kippur, walks out backwards. So I don't accept that challenge. And as far as not creating more windows in the house to allow more light to enter in, that's only when I'm not sure if there was nega in the house or not. So you don't have to start opening windows to see whether there is or there isn't a nega. But once there's an established nega in the house, and now the only thing we're doing is leaving the house for 7 days to see whether or not the nega expands or contracts in size for the next 7 days. So maybe once there's a nega that's discovered, of course they're going to open up windows and allow more light to come in. So the Gemara says, so these arguments that you produced are not valid arguments. And so the Gemara right now says, I don't think that we can deductively come away from this episode of Tzara'as and therefore conclusively say that this teaches us the principle of Chazaka. With all that stated, the Gemara says, you know what? We do. We do walk away with the principle of Chazaka, and specifically from here. Tanya Delokar of Acha Bar Yaakov Vayatza Kohen Min HaBayis Yachol Yelech Lesoch Bayis V'Yaskir. I might thought that the Kohen should be rendering a Hezger decision in the house. Tamalam Ral Pesach HaBayis. So no, the Kohen goes to the front of the house, meaning he exits the house and stands in front of the house and then renders a decision of Hezger, that the house has to sit there for the next 7 days. I Pesach HaBayis Yachol Yamo Tachas HaMashko V'Yaskir Tamalam Ral Min HaBayis Achi Yetzim Min HaBayis Kulo. Now, you can't stay under the lentil. You have to be exiting the house. So what he does is that he actually walks outside of the house, and then he rules that the house needs to be in a state of hezger for the next 7 days. Now, if he were to do a hezger, either when he got home or while in the house, so the Hezger is going to be rendered a good Hezger, even though it's not lechatchila the way it should have been done. And what we just all learned together is that even if he walked all the way home and declared the house to be a bais mitzaras, menuga, that needs to be sitting there for another 7 days, so it would be okay. Now consider what we just all learned together. He walked home. That must have taken some time. How do I know that the size of the nega has maintained status quo so since he left? The answer must be chazaka. So the Gemara says, Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Now what's he going to say to counter that? Kigon dekai midar degavri v'armre kidekai kai. And so what you could argue, in other words, if you wanted to defend Rav Acha bar Yaakov, is basically he was sent a text. Now I know, as do you, that they didn't have texting back then, or at least I'm pretty sure. But the Gemara constructs a scenario in which a communication can be created from the house to where the Kohen was. You know, obviously now this is going to be sans technology, but we are going to go from one person to the next, to the next, to the next, all the way from the house to the Kohen. So even though the Kohen's sitting in his house, he can be given, quote-unquote, real-time reporting that the size of the tzaras has not changed, and we don't necessarily have to conclude chazaka. Okay, so as much as the Gemara argued the source, it seems to be that this, in fact, is the source of Chazaka by virtue of the fact that a Kohen can render a decision of the Nega in the house, even though he has lost visibility, vision of the Nega for some time, even so much as him walking home. Nevertheless, we assume that the size of the Nega remained in status quo, and this is the source of Chazaka according to the Gemara. Tomorrow we begin with Yod Aleph Amud Aleph, and tomorrow we talk about the principle of Rov and where do we see that clearly stated in the Torah.